Howdy, friends. Today we chat with Michael Jacobs about how to turn your average Mercedes Sprinter cargo van into a true adventure van. We're going to get to that in a minute. First, I have some requests. Are you listening? Let me know. It's hard to track this stuff, and I need to know I'm not just whistling in the dark here. Would you mind posting a comment on the website? If you're feeling particularly charitable, find us on iTunes and give us a rating and a review. That would be spectacular. Did you know we have a YouTube channel? Well, we do. We do reviews, trip reports, and crash our drone on camera just for your amusement. Actually, we crash the drone because we don't know how to fly. Anyway, check us out over there on YouTube. Just search for All Terrain Family. This is going to sound weird, but do you have a John Denver story? I'm working on an episode about the man who sang the soundtrack to so many of our adventures growing up. If you have something to tell us about John Denver, let me know. Send me a note at allterrainfamily@gmail.com. Lastly, who should we have on the show next? The slate is clear. We need to get someone in. Let us know who you want to talk to next. The slate is clear, and we need to get someone in. Let us know who you want us to talk to next. All right, enough of that. Here's episode 12 with Michael Jacobs. All right, Michael, thanks for coming.
Glad to be here.
So I'm going to go ahead and put you on the spot since you've got a MacBook right there in front of you. Go ahead and look at the home screen, at your desktop background, since this is about overlanding and adventure.
Look at my desktop
background?
Yeah,
just the desktop background that I saw you have there.
Okay.
So it's the High Sierra desktop background. Do you happen to know where that is?
I don't exactly know where that is. It looks familiar to me, and I was thinking about it the other day.
Where could it be?
But I don't know where that is. It's got...
Yeah, so it's a mountain scene. I don't have it on mine anymore, but it's a mountain scene with snow on the mountains and beautiful colored trees. Anyway, it occurred to me the other day that looks super familiar. Where could that be? And I was like, I know where that is. But so any of you who are listening and you happen to know where that is, we'll do a little contest. And if you can tell me where that is, maybe I'll send you a sticker or something. And I'll edit this out, but I'm going to tell Michael right now where it is. It's.
But I felt it was an Eastern Sierra.
Yeah, yeah.
Picture. I just couldn't place it, and that's because I haven't actually been there. But the terrain and the general colors look familiar to me.
It's a really nice. There's a good fishing there, good hiking. There's easy access to the John Muir Trail and the PCT, and the Darwin Divide, Mount Darwin, and Ionian Basin, and all that stuff is right back there. It's really cool, really nice.
Really nice destination.
It's definitely a place to go. Place to go in a van. And you're here to talk to us about vans. So
not just vans, adventure vans.
Adventure vans. So tell us why a van and why not? Why a van and not like, you know, the old standby for this podcast, the Toyota 4Runner?
Well, I guess there's no reason why you can't use a 4Runner for just about anything you want to do, just the same as any really nice SUV that we've all used, or a pickup truck with a shell on the back, kind of the standby, tried and true vehicle that you can drive to work every day and also pack up with all your gear,
right?
Keep it dry and head out. But the reason why a van versus something like that, I can just tell you my story. Been a pretty serious mountain biker for many, many years, and outdoor enthusiast of different types of adventure sports. And coming out of the Bay Area for so many years, you know, you pack up your SUV and your boxes on the top and whatever you have, you hang your, $6,000 mountain bike off the back and, off you go. And so that's kind of the way we live. And you get someplace and maybe you don't exactly feel like pitching a tent. Maybe it's raining. Maybe it's just late. You just don't want to deal with it. But we all do it. And then we do our thing and we work really hard. And then we come back to our tent. After cooking dinner or whatever we do, and you crawl inside and look for a nice sleep. Well, maybe you're on a flat spot. Maybe you're not. Maybe there's a rock sticking in your back. Maybe there isn't. Anyway, it's compromised at best. So the reason people make switch from that kind of a lifestyle to a van is because a van is this great combination of things that accommodate an outdoor sports enthusiast who has a lot of gear to store. They right. don't want it strapped all over the outside of their SUV necessarily to get stolen or to just be in the weather or just, or what have you. You want to be able to go places that you can generally go in your SUV as opposed to a big camper or something like that. Or a,
right.
You know, on the back of your truck, access-wise to get there. And you want to do it with no muss and no fuss. You just want to go where you want to go. You want to pull over and you want to be inside with just, you know, yourself or friends or with their, all their gear. You want it stowed in good, you know, organized fashion, but there's plenty of room for you to sleep inside and stay warm and get, you know, get your food taken care of. And then in the morning you get up and you start the engine and off you go to wherever right. you want to be the next day, as opposed to dealing with a camp
right.
where you've got a tent and you maybe had to take a reservation at a campsite because you can't just pull over and pitch your tent anywhere.
Right.
These vans, you can, if you set them upright, you can just pull over, roll the window covers down and mind your own business, and people are not the wiser. It's not like you're showing off a big camper or a motorhome or some pop top
right.
combination
right.
where people know that you're in there.
Right.
So
cool. What, so, you know, you get more gear, more comfort, and you've chosen the Sprinter van, the Mercedes Sprinter van. Why Sprinter van? The other most common adventure van would be like the Ford Econoline or, more the Ford Transit. But particularly the Econoline, they'll lift those and four wheel drive those things. And, you know, like the obvious one would be the Sportsmobile.
Yeah, I think they sort of picked up where Vanagon dropped off
mm-hmm.
years
For
ago.
Sure. Well, it's the same pop top.
Yeah. Is it?
It's the same pop top. Yeah, the Sportsmobile, the guy who started Sportsmobile invented the original pop top that was on the Westphalia vans.
Oh, that's a story I didn't know.
And it used to pop straight up. And to get around the patent, the new ones pop, you know, at an angle.
Hmm. Didn't know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they kind of, you know, I think they really created, I wouldn't call a Vanagon, which I think are fabulous vehicles.
Right.
And they're so iconic and cool too. Necessarily a modern adventure van, although you can really outfit them extensively
right.
now. But I think, yeah, I think Sportsmobile took it and put it on the Ford platform because that was the best platform at the time. They have a great four-wheel drive system on there, and it's diesel engines, a lot of them, and
right.
and they went with it. And so they evolved, I think, the modern adventure van. When I started seeing these vans, that's what I saw
right.
Were those, and they're so cool. And they're still cool. They're great for really seriously getting off-road into some legit, you know, 4x4.
Yeah, they're fully capable. I mean, it's a real 4x4 truck, the Ford
yeah.
conversion ones.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so for that, you know, a Sprinter van doesn't really do that. It's just got too long a wheelbase.
Right.
The shorter wheelbase ones are better. But yeah, so you move from there into people wanting more space inside. And I think the Sprinter platform started to become more popular with companies like Outside Van, I think, pioneering the Sprinter van platform. They're
right.
up in kind of outside of Portland. And it became just about space inside, I
right.
think, really.
Right.
And so when you want more space, you're going to go to a Sprinter van.
Mm-hmm.
And actually Sportsmobile is building out Sprinter vans now.
Yeah.
Also.
Yep.
So, you know, I think that was the driver for that. It wasn't so much, doesn't really replace a Sportsmobile.
Right. Just a different kind of thing.
But yeah, I think it's about space and not needing that hardcore off-road capability
right.
that you can get built into, you know, that Ford platform.
Right. So tell me about some of the advantages of the Sprinter van, particularly like, we'll start with like the engine. I mean, they come with a different powertrain than you can get on a Ford truck.
Yeah. Basically. Well, as you know, like Sprinter vans became popular because they were the first ones to really build this, you know, this high top van
mm-hmm.
and they're made for, you know, they're a full commercial van. So they're designed to be. Originally, you know, what we saw were the FedEx vans,
right.
FedEx and DHL and some of these guys
right.
Really jumped on that platform when Mercedes owned Chrysler.
Right.
And so they started importing under the Dodge name, but those vans are all Dusseldorf built, you know, Mercedes-Benz vehicles.
They even imported them under the Freightliner brand at one time.
They did. They branded them Freightliner. I'm not really sure why they did that, but it was the same as the Dodge, really. They're all...
And they called them Sprinter. It's not like they made up a different name for them.
Right.
It was a Dodge Sprinter or the Freightliner Sprinter or the Mercedes Sprinter.
Yeah, they changed the grill and everything. I think a lot of the Freightliner had to do with, some sort of a package that... The deal between Mercedes and Freightliner was a package that had a lot to do with a fleet.
Uh-huh.
A fleet of vans, per se, and that went along with a fleet, kind of the smaller version of what the large Freightliner trucks fleets are.
Right.
So I think it fit into that category somehow. But they're out there, and they did service and maintenance on them, and it was part of the whole Freightliner package when you got into a commercial van like that, I believe. So why Sprinters? Sprinters are nice because they're about the same width as a pickup truck, so they're not wider. They're a little longer, but they're tall, so you can stand up in there. The older Sprinters became really well known as workhorses, because of these inline five-cylinder turbo diesel motors, that they have.
Is that a Mercedes engine?
It's a Mercedes engine. Yeah, it's 2.7 liter
inline five-cylinder. So it must be sitting crossways, transverse.
No, it sits front. You know, front to back.
Really interesting.
And so they just. At that time, they just ran great. They're really not a lot of horsepower in them. Tons of torque, though.
Right.
And they go forever. You know, you can put 500,000 miles to 1,000,000 miles on those motors if you really take care of them.
Right.
And they're designed to run around at, 23 to 25 miles to the gallon.
And they get that. Like, they get that literally. Yeah. You actually get that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They really do. And so they're just great vehicles, and they ran around out there for a long time. And so people started realizing, hey, why don't I build out one of these vans? I'll just buy a van. I'm some sort of a sports enthusiast. I can buy an older van and do my own do-it-yourself job to it and end up with what I need to go kite surfing or snowboarding or throw my motorcycle in the back
and get going.
Do some dirt biking and all that.
Well, so how do they perform, like, practically? So... I know we don't have to get into actual numbers. So they don't have a lot of horsepower. They've got lots of torque. I don't recall ever getting stuck behind one on a hill anywhere. I mean, they don't have any issues with freeway speeds going up and down hills.
They've got no power problems.
Really?
Once they start, they're like they're a diesel engine. It's kind of like a big truck. It's kind of like a miniature big rig diesel engine, the way it performs. Once it gets rolling, it just kind of holds its speed, goes up and down mountain passes. Because of the turbo, altitude really doesn't, come into play. It's just got all this torque, and set the cruise control and off you go. They're designed for running, loading 3 or 4 big pallets of something and going coast to coast.
Yeah.
So that's what a lot of the expediters were using.
Right. And, you're not running crazy amounts of weight in them for adventure van is not
really. So I think you're under taxing the van,
right?
So it just adds to probably the lifespan you can get out of
them. Right.
And so you can buy these vans, these older ones, with 200,000 or 300,000 miles on them, and they've been taken care of.
That's not
no reason
deal.
Why you can't get another 200,000 or 300,000 or 400,000 or 500,000 miles out of them.
Right. So, what kind of range do they have? Sort of the ones you have, how what kind of range do you get out of them?
Oh, it depends. I'd say, somewhere in the 500 to 600 mile range, depending on, how much crosswind you're fighting.
Right.
And what kind of speed you're trying to maintain out on.
It's like a 30-gallon tank.
Something like that. It's like a 26-gallon tank.
Well, with that kind of mileage. Yeah, our Ford F-150 has a 36-gallon tank, and we can get lots and lots of miles out of it.
Yeah, for sure.
Just because... Not because of mileage, but because of,
it's a lot of fuel.
It's a lot of fuel. And then you can't fill it up because it costs more than $100 to fill it up.
The newer Sprinter vans don't get that kind of economy.
Really?
They have a V6 version that they came out with in, I think, 2007 was when they did the model change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great motor. It's a very smooth running motor. You get a lot of miles out. But over the years... they started to add more and more emissions to these engines, which allows them or doesn't allow them to run as efficiently and breathe as freely and so forth as they did in the early ones. Just had less emissions. They had emissions, just a lot less.
Less of them.
And so, you know, these newer ones have to run a lot hotter to burn the particulates, and you have this diesel, called this DEF fluid, which all diesel trucks need these days.
Right.
So you got to put that in now, and it just it just chips away at your mileage. They have a V6 version and an inline four cylinder version. The four cylinder gets better mileage, but probably not as good as that inline five.
Right.
I don't think.
The there's this other podcast. I'll have to look the name up later, post it in the show notes. But it's one of the four-wheel drive podcasts out of Australia, and they had an episode a month or so ago about sort of the future of diesel engines. And basically the conclusion was they're probably just going to go away over the next couple of years. I mean, they just can't be made clean enough to warrant, you know, producing them. And the emissions regulations are probably just going to starve them out, you know. And,
yeah, it's tough. Well, that's why I think you've seen, you know, Sprinter kind of had the early early game with this type of a van, and you're seeing other vans come on board now. The Ford Transit has a really, you know, that Ford V6, that turbo, twin turbo V6 is a great motor, and I think a lot of those vans benefit from that, being able to run gas, gets good gas mileage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what it gets, but that's a good motor for that.
So, you have a new van. And you have some older vans, and we'll talk a little bit at the end about why you have more than one van. But so with the older vans, one thing that I'm always curious about is first build quality. How do they survive the decade between when they were built and now, and how much do they cost now to get one of these older vans that's in decent shape?
Yeah, so if you look around, you can find these vans for anywhere from, you know, just a straight cargo van, anywhere from eight nine thousand up to 17,000, depending on the mileage. You can find some low mileage ones around that are probably 18,000 or 19,000.
Right, that's not bad.
Something like that. There's, you know, two. There's the cargo van style. And then there's the passenger van style. The passenger van's got the windows through it and all the bench seats that you can take out. Or you can just get a cargo van that's just got nothing in it.
Right.
And pick
and
them
no windows.
And no windows, yeah, except for usually the back doors, usually.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it just depends. And it depends. You got to know what you're looking for. And you got to be, you know, cognizant of how the things have been maintained and be able to check up on them. A lot of people buy them out of the fleet auctions.
Right.
The FedEx and other companies like that have fleet auctions. And you typically see those vans. There's some lower mile vans out of there too, but typically you see those with 225, 240,000 miles on them. There's some...
That's not bad.
There's some, yeah, they've taken care of them and fleet maintained. You know, they don't really spare a lot of... They don't spare maintenance on those because if they're down, that's costing them money.
Right.
So even though they have a lot of miles, they've been really well maintained, and you can, and they have a whole maintenance history behind them.
Right.
So you can see what's going on.
And they probably don't, I mean, obviously they'll do oil changes and, you know, timing belt changes, basic maintenance like that and seals and whatnot, but they probably pay attention to like shocks and suspension as well, because they wouldn't want those things, you know, rolling over and failing on the freeway and squishing somebody.
Yeah. I haven't purchased one that way. They have that used. The vans I have were... usually, I think both of them were second owner vans,
right?
And they weren't used commercially like that. But I wouldn't have a problem with it. It's more an issue of where is it being used in the country,
right?
In terms of you know, parts of the country that have salt in the winter on the roads, and they tend to rust out. Those older vans definitely susceptible to rust problems.
Yeah.
So you got to keep an eye on that stuff.
Right.
And even if it's a West Coast van, if it's been on the coast. And outside, and usually these vans are spend their life outside.
Right.
You have to kind of keep an eye on where rust is coming in.
Right. So, in order to take one of these vans and make it an adventure van, assuming you're not going to convert it to four-wheel drive, what sort of suspension mods do you like to make? What do you recommend? And what have you done to sort of help them get down those dirty roads. Because you posted a video last week of somebody doing a pretty gnarly road near Bishop in one of your vans.
Yeah, that's the White Mountain Road. And actually, that was with my 2015 4x4.
Okay.
It's a 170 length 4x4.
Okay, so that's not... I was wondering, that looked like more than you'd want to do in a two-wheel drive van.
You know, going down would be fine in the two-wheel drive van. Right. It's just about if you ever have to, like, back up something.
Right.
You know, maybe if you're in a switchback and someone else is coming and you need to back up.
Right.
I think you might get some slippage in the two-wheel drive van. But as far as ground clearance and all that sort of thing,
they're fine.
No problem.
So how do you get that from a two-wheel drive van?
Yeah, so when I bought the two vans that you've seen, Gus and Bess, by the way, I've named them after
right.
real mules.
Yeah, famous mules.
In the history of the mule trains in the Eastern Sierra, that's kind of my theme.
Yep.
We're doing the same thing that mules did. We just haul people and their gear in and out of the mountains, economically. And
it's a noble profession.
Yeah. So anyway, I ran across a company down in Atascadero called Van Compass.
Right.
And these are two engineers came out of Cal Poly, which is where I went to school. So it was a particular interest to me. I was checking out what they were doing. And they're 4x4 guys. Professionally, they were working for a 4x4 fabricator down that way and learned a lot of things along the way. And they decided to start a company to cater to people that wanted to modify their vans. And I think they started with the Sprinter platform and the older Sprinter platform. That's what caught my eye.
Right.
So they make a lift kit. So you can get a 2-inch lift kit and have it installed. It's really, really slick. And 2 inches on those vans gets you the ability to run a taller tire.
Right.
So that you get about 3 inches of lift out of the whole package, which really gets you up anyway, because those vans are very clean underneath if you look.
Right.
There's just nothing hanging down.
Yeah, I did look in when I was in your shop and there is nothing hanging down. You could probably set them down with no issues.
Yeah, so they're that's really nice. And those guys make... they make skid plates for them. So I put a skid plate system on my vans just to, a lot of times you pull into a trailhead, you want to get as far in as you can, but there's always rocks,
right?
Keeping you from going too far in. And
right.
I just didn't want anyone punching a rock through the
van. Yeah, well, with overlanding and four wheeling, you either go for clearance or protection.
Exactly. I felt I needed both.
Right.
But anyway, so it's kind of started with that. And then design-wise, it's just trying to put together a van that's clean and doesn't have a lot of fancy accoutrements that can be broken,
right,
or rattle loose or whatever. So,
sticking with suspension for a second, what do you do anything for traction in those? Do they have any kind of limited slip or
they have a great limited slip,
limited slip.
Just factory limited slip. I think it's the best limited slip system I've ever personally experienced.
Okay.
It's fabulous, which really goes a long ways. And so everyone always asks me, well, what about the wintertime? You can't run them in the winter. They're not four-wheel drive. That's true. But if you kind of know a little bit about how to drive in the winter, you can go most of the places I would want you to go.
Right.
With the van, I've got, BF Goodrich KO2s on there.
Right.
They're taller. And four sandbags in the back,
right?
Because a lot of people don't always bring a lot of gear. You just throw some skis and a few duffels in the back. You're not really weighting the van. So
right.
I want to weight the van. It drives better down the road anyway than a half empty cargo van.
Right.
But then you get that weight in the back and you can, with that traction control, you can go pretty much anywhere you should be going.
Right. Yeah. I've driven a heavy vehicle, a full size vehicle with some kind of traction implement in the back, and it does obviate the need for four-wheel drive in a lot of situations.
Yeah.
And then, snow. The four-wheel drive only helps you going forward, doesn't help you going sideways or stopping.
So, yeah, that's right. So they've got great great ABS system, great traction control system, good tires, weight.
Right.
And also length, I think, is really helps a car go down the road.
Straight. Yeah
straight.
So tell me about how you set a van up as far as, let's start with like sleeping. Where do you sleep in these, how do you have the sleeping situation set up in the vans?
Yeah, there's different configurations, and I'm still coming up with what'll be my standard build as I build out more of these, I build my small fleet of vans.
Right.
But I think the most efficient design for gear and sleeping seems to be a raised bed in the back. Mm-hmm. And you end up with something that's about a roughly a queen size bed panel, and you raise it up. So you've got all the room underneath for all your gear, which it's cavernous
right
underneath. And then you can also set up an arrangement in the front where you've got some kind of a bench seat that folds into a bed.
Okay.
And you can work that arrangement. I'm working on some different configurations for that. I also have another configuration where, you know, people said, hey, what if, you know, what if we don't want to all sleep up in the, you know, it's nice if you're with your wife or something like that, up in a queen size bed and it's cozy and everything. But what if you're, you know, what if it's not a trip like that,
you right
know, and you just want your own private berth, place to sleep. So I've got my other van set up with two large bunks, one above the other.
Right.
In the back, and they flip up against the wall to make the whole back end open.
Right.
And you've
that
got a nice a nice couch that folds out into, you know, a larger than a couch.
Mm-hmm.
I would say maybe it's a full size, full.
Okay.
Different configurations like that. And you can always sleep on the, throw your camper mat down
right
on the floor and sleep if you don't have too much gear in your way. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
I was thinking you could also put a cot in there too if you wanted to.
You could do any of that stuff, and people do. But the key is you're inside, you're out of the weather,
right,
and you're warm. You know, they've got diesel heating systems built in these vans that are the same things you find in a big rig truck.
Right.
They've been around for a long time. They're tried and true, and they run off the same fuel that the van runs off, so you can be out in the middle of nowhere without
right
having to run the engine and stay warm.
Right. So underneath the bed, you've got storage, and it's basically like a queen-size bed of storage that's like 4 feet high.
Yeah.
You can put bikes, whatever back there.
Yeah, it's
like no shortage of storage.
Well over 6 feet deep.
Right.
And, you know, it's high enough to be able to put, you know, a road bike in there with the front wheel off, and I've got fork mounts in there, and you don't have to put your seat down on it.
Right, okay.
That kind of thing. You can get four bikes across, or combination of bikes and skis and all kinds of gear in there.
Right. And then I guess you have a rack system on top, just in case somebody needs even more storage.
Yeah, I've got full Yakima rack.
Yakima, so it's like the Yakima rails with crossbars that you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's a standard each van set up to be able to put. I don't leave them on all the time because
right
if you don't need them, it's just something else to get hung up in tree branches or something like that. But if you need them, there's two sets. So each van's got four crossbars.
Oh, cool.
So you can put four boxes.
Right, because it's basically like two cars worth of space up there.
Yeah, anyway. It's huge.
Yeah.
So someone needs to gear up, for longer trips. I had a couple that last spring took a van on they got married and did their honeymoon trip.
Right.
Nearly a month of, you know, traveling around the Western parks in the U.S.
Cool.
National parks. And, they didn't take a box, but that's the kind of trip where you might want a box
right
or something just to get some stuff out of the way so it's not in your way the whole time.
One of my earlier episodes, I think it was episode 5, was talked to a friend who rented a Cruise America RV, like a big, you know, big RV.
Yeah, we see him all over.
And did like a 2-week trip with his daughters on that. And that was a fun trip like that, you know, extended. So a van like this would be a good extended trip for somebody who doesn't necessarily want to drive a giant RV.
Yeah. It's people fly in from all over the country to rent these vans because they realize they can't find this somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Their options are, you know, a Cruise America van, which is not a bad way to go. It just limits you in the size of the van and stuff. It
right
changes how you do your trip. But they're either looking at getting a Sprinter and they think, well, I'll just take a trip in a Sprinter and I can't find one around, other places
right
like this. So, hey, here's one. We'll fly into Reno. We'll Uber over to the Sierra Mule shop.
Right.
And off we go. And it works. It just works really slick for people that want
to. Well, this is a good place to go for adventures anyway.
Oh, for sure.
So what, how do you have the camper set up for cooking and eating? You've got a little galley in there.
Yeah. So each van's got a galley. It's got a simple sink. It just drains into a little gray water, container.
Right.
That you can empty. And you've got fresh water. One pumps water. One, you just pull a jug and set it up on the
right
counter over the sink, which I actually prefer myself.
Right.
And you've got camp stoves and things like that. You've got an ARB fridge, so you've got plenty of refrigerator to work with.
Right.
And all the pots and pans and you know, plates.
It's kind of like a, it's kind of like, I mean, it's basically really similar to my overland camping setup, but it's all contained inside a van.
Yeah, it's all in drawers.
I mean, it's not, we're not talking like Earth Roamer level,
no,
you know, glam or, I mean, it's a, you know, it's a basic thing for an adventurer who's used to adventuring.
It's like camping.
Yeah, it's like camping.
In a van.
Yeah.
As far as like the quality of, you know, the level of stuff you have, it's
right.
all that kind of same stuff you would take on a camping trip.
Right.
Yep.
And, you know, some of that stuff is nice too, because if you happen to be at a campsite, a campground, or it's a nice evening and you feel like pulling that stove out and cooking dinner on the picnic table.
Yeah.
You can do that. And it's, you know, you're not stuck cooking in the camper just because that's where your stove is. You know?
Yeah. I generally don't think people really want to cook in there.
Yeah.
They'd rather be outside or, and you know, I think mostly what happens is, you know, on these kind of trips, again, it's like camping, right? It's, you bring camping food, and a lot of camping food is just all about heating water up.
Right.
And pouring it in there.
Right.
You know, for what you do. And if you want to go outside, that's great. But what I've learned with these vans from using mine personally, and I've been so thankful for the van so many times where you get someplace in the middle of winter, yeah, you might expect it to be a situation where you want, you know, you're going to be inside.
Right.
But a lot of times you'll go someplace and you're hoping you can be outside.
Right.
But there's something going on with the weather.
Right.
That, you know, prevents you from being outside. I mean, it's just,
right.
you know, it's windy, it's dusty. It's all of a sudden you get a storm comes out of mm-hmm. nowhere. You've got, you know, summer before last, it was meat bees.
Yeah, that was crazy, you know? Wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, nobody could do anything outside up in Tahoe, and I'd pull up and, you know, all my vans have nice screens.
Screens, yep.
The side door, so I could whip that side door open,
yep.
keep that screen shut, and...
those meat bees were crazy. Yeah. I got stung so many times.
It was insanity.
Anyway, if you don't know what we're talking about, 2 years ago or whatever, for whatever reason, there was a gazillion meat bees everywhere around Tahoe. So you couldn't eat a sandwich without ingesting several meat bees. So tell me about power. You've got solar panel and batteries. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Got, you know, each van's got a 160-watt solar panel
mm-hmm.
on the roof and a good solar controller and two auxiliary batteries, two
100-amp-hour
batteries. I've just been also experimenting with some new lithiums from Battleborn Batteries.
Okay, yeah.
Which I can't speak highly enough. I had two 100-amp-hour AGMs in before, good batteries. But as you know, the AGMs, you can only draw them down
right.
halfway in order to get them to charge back up fully.
Right.
It's just I think it's a deficiency in the way those things work, actually.
Right.
And so if you have 200-amp-hour batteries, you really only have 100 amp hours to work with.
Those are big lead-acid batteries?
No, these, well, they're
like gel-pack batteries.
They're gel batteries.
Right.
Yeah. And they're great because you can put them inside and they're sealed.
Right?
So you don't have to deal with the lead-acid, you know, the lead-acid fumes and things like that.
Right.
Well, lead-acid are good batteries too, but you got to maintain them more.
Right.
And you can't have them inside because
right.
of the fumes. So,
right.
But these this company, Battleborn Batteries, has designed some lithiums
mm-hmm.
to service the deep cycle RV community.
Cool.
And so I'm experimenting with those, and you can draw those down almost all the way thousands of times, and they'll charge back up. So, you know, you get better power. So I've got those in one of the vans that I've tried out, and it's incredible how much better they are.
And do you have like charging ports, and those run the lights and whatever?
Yeah, I've got several, you know, quite a few USB ports to the van, so you can plug in whatever you want to plug in. It's got
right.
a power inverter, so you can plug directly in from, you know, a coffee pot or
right.
you know, your charging system for your computer.
Okay.
Things like that. You
okay.
can, or charging for lights, mountain bike light, you know, night
right.
lights and all that kind of stuff you want to charge.
Right.
As well as the USB ports.
Right. And yeah. camera gear.
That's yeah, what and I... GoPro stuff. Yeah, right on.
Yeah. My, you know, my biggest issue with some of our extended trips is charging camera gear. And then I have to charge laptop in order to transfer photos over. So the Sprinter platform is real popular with photographers.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I had a fella come up. He drove up from where is he? He came up from Phoenix, and he's a big fisherman, right? So he came up last winter to go fishing at Pyramid to get some of those big fish out there, And one of the things he said was, hey, first of all, I can't find a van like this around to rent. It's, you can find them built out like RVs.
Right.
And they're very plush inside, but there's no room inside them to like to work with your gear and stuff like that. And a great example is like, yeah, you know, I could sit inside there and it's cold and windy out there, for example.
Right.
And when you do your fishing out there, it's in the middle of winter. And he says, yeah, I could sit inside with my pole, my 6-foot pole, and tie flies.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, another vehicle where you just don't have that kind of room to stretch that out, or being in your SUV and you're camping in a tent.
Yeah.
And he's like, you don't really appreciate that until you have to do it.
Right.
And you can come back and sit in the van and warm your fingers up. You've been sitting out there on your chair, your elevated chair in the water, and you're working with your line and you're working with your flies and your lures and stuff like that.
Pyramid's a place where people go out and they stand on a ladder or a chair or something because it's really shallow, right? And they fly fish from above the water way out there a ways.
And it's winter, so it's just cold. It's cold. So he said you just get cold. So you can hop back in that van really quickly to, you know, work on your work on your gear, and your fingers aren't numb and stuff like that. So,
so the last issue with the van, or the last question with the van. So, seating. So you've got those set up with 5 seat belts, right?
On, yeah, exactly. So I've got on the couch or the bench seats. There's 3 people can sit across,
right?
On those, and then the front, and then the front 2. And the fronts, by the way, they swivel. So you can. Those become kind of part of the interior furniture.
For like dining, so you got a table for the back, a table for the front.
Yeah, exactly.
Kids table, which sounds nice. so you get, and the back seat is, it's not directly behind the front seats. There's that whole galley area, right? So it's like if you had the thing set up as a passenger van, you've basically taken out the first row of seats, and the second row of seats is still there, right?
In one of the vans, the bench seat goes back right in front of the bed, so you got all that room in the middle,
right?
And then the other one, the couch is along the wall behind the driver's seat.
Okay,
so it's just a different configuration.
Cool. Awesome. Well, it sounds like a really good setup, and it's interesting to hear about how that goes together. Are there any other vendors or providers of equipment that you recommend that you use to build these vans out, other than Van Compass?
Well, Van Compass is great. I kind of mentioned the Battleborne batteries. I'll definitely be building anything I build going forward. Will have those deep cycle RV lithiums. They're fantastic.
Right.
And I highly endorse the ARB line of products for awnings.
Okay.
Things like the refrigerator are fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah. Those are, you know, some of the main things.
Cool. All right, so now let's talk about why you have 3 vans. So if listeners have probably figured out, so Michael runs a company called the Sierra Mule, and you've got 2 vans that you rent out, adventure vans that you rent out for people to take by the night for adventures all over, wherever they want to go, basically, but you rent them here in Reno, Nevada.
That's right.
And so how long have you been doing this with these vans?
Yeah, for the more or less about a year. Mm-hmm. You know, I bought one van summer before last and kind of fixed it up throughout the summer and got it ready and put it into the fleet, in October. And then I had bought another van in September that was just a pure cargo van, and I started to convert it, but it wasn't really ready until end of March.
Okay.
So, you know, about a year, more or less.
And where do people take these?
They take them all over out here.
Yeah.
I'd say, you know, generally popular areas for them to go are obviously Tahoe.
Right.
Seems like people usually go somewhere else and they either start off spending time in Tahoe or end up in Tahoe.
Right.
Yosemite is a very popular trip.
Right.
It's a good distance for the van and they can have some fun. Going down the eastern side of the Sierras is just got so Perfect. Many things you can do down there. People come in and do, you know, ski trips and things like that. So they'll pop down there and they'll camp, you know, and it's nice because the winter's generally a little slower traffic-wise in the outdoors.
Right.
People are going to the ski resorts, but not so much other places. So if you've got a van that's got some ground clearance, you can go spend the night in some really super cool places, especially the hot springs and things like that down there.
Well, all those campgrounds on the east side close down at the end of November, or the beginning of November, whenever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And well, not all of them. Some of them are open, but you could literally leave from Reno and ski at Tahoe, ski at Mammoth, and then if you keep going down, you could climb, you could go rock climbing or mountain biking outdoors at Alabama Hills.
Yep.
Just right underneath Mount Whitney.
Yep.
Any time of the year. I mean, it's almost always nice there.
Yeah. It's super cool. So people go there. They do the Death Valley.
Yep, Death Valley.
Trip down through there, and they loop around. A lot of people end up going north, go up through Lassen,
mm-hmm.
and head up to Bend.
Right.
And make a loop through there.
That'd be nice. Lassen and Bend would be a nice trip.
Yeah. So that part of the world is now. You find people from Reno, I've found, generally taking the vans and going that direction, going up into Idaho and the eastern side of Washington.
Right.
And then back through Oregon.
Right.
Go that direction.
It'd be nice to do, you've probably done this, take them up to Lassen and camp out there at the parking lot, which you can do, and then skiing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. The backcountry crowd hasn't really latched on to the vans quite yet. I had a company last year. It's a startup company called Coalition Snow.
Yep.
It's a ski and board manufacturing company.
Yep.
They focus on performance skis and boards for women.
Mm-hmm.
And so they needed
They've got a good podcast too. Coalition Snow has a podcast. Jennifer does a podcast with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they rented one of the vans, Gus, just because of the storage capability and the fact that they didn't have to rent hotel rooms everywhere.
Right.
And took the van out to, the big industry show in Denver last year, and then
Outdoor Retailer,
yeah, and hit all the ski resorts on the way back in the Rockies and Utah, doing demo days and things like that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So that was tons of room in those things for all the skis they have to take.
Yeah.
So, all right, so the vans rent from Reno, and basically the system is somebody. So how do they get a hold of you to rent one of these vans?
So they go to the website. And then they can contact me through the website.
It's thesierramule.com.
Thesierramule.com. Mm-hmm. And then I can answer questions. There's some pictures of the vans, and it kind of explains the program. But then I usually send them, if they're interested in renting, I actually book them and rent them through a site called Outdoorsy.
Outdoorsy, okay.
And that's very convenient because it's basically like, Airbnb for campers and RVs and things like that. There's other ones out there. This one's it's a little newer and it's a really great interface. And what they do for you is they give you a place to obviously post information about your vehicle.
Right.
They have a big, search engine, activity going on. So more people will find your rental that way.
Okay.
But they handle, for me, it's great because they handle the whole booking. So they collect the money.
Right.
They do the driver's check. They handle the insurance.
Oh.
So my vans are insured by them.
I was wondering.
While someone else is driving them.
Interesting.
And then they handle, the deposit. They hold the deposit. And then it just makes it so much easier to deal with all this. So that's what happens is people ask me about a trip. I tell them it sounds great. I give some advice on which van might be the better one for them if there's a choice. And then I send them to Outdoorsy and they book. And it's really easy.
It
works really slick.
And what is the cost, basically the estimate of cost for a trip with these?
Yeah, it depends on how many days. There's a 3-day minimum,
mm-hmm.
Generally. And the vans go for, around roughly $150 to $180 a day, depending on what part of the season it's in.
Okay.
And you get a seven day break, for a week versus, something less than that.
Right.
And then if you want to go longer than that, then I can, I'll negotiate a
cool,
a rate that's in keeping with what they're going to do with the van.
Awesome. And then, so you have a Facebook page.
I do.
You have a Facebook, and you have an Instagram account.
Yes.
So people can follow you there. The Sierra Mule. I always try to give people the exact Instagram name, and I never get it right. So just search the Sierra Mule, and you will
it
find
it. It is the Sierra Mule.
It's the Sierra Mule.
It is.
Just at the Sierra Mule, and you'll find it. And there you go. Cool. Well, I look forward to checking out the vans more. I'd like to get a video tour and check them out like that. So listeners, check out our website and our YouTube channel, and Facebook if you feel like it, and keep an eye out for that. And we'll get back to you soon. Thanks for coming in and chatting with us.
Enjoyed it, Mike. Thanks for inviting me.
Awesome. Cool. And we're out.
Follow Michael on Instagram at the Sierra Mule. And subscribe to this podcast wherever you get podcasts. Also, you know, it's flu season, so share this podcast with your friends. Even if they don't like it, they'll appreciate not getting sick. The All Terrain Podcast is created by me, Mike Henderson, at the Reno Collective in Reno, Nevada.